So yesterday we were reporting on a foiled plot to blow up another commercial airliner. An Al-Qaeda bomb maker in Yemen came up with another chemically triggered underwear bomb. No metal parts, difficult to detect, but stopped in time. The FBI is now looking at that bomb and its details at an explosives headquarters that the FBI maintains in Virginia. But today, maybe an even bigger revelation. The man described yesterday as a would-be suicide bomber was actually a double agent. The CIA has not disclosed the agent's identity. It's believed he worked for Saudi Arabia's intelligence agency. And after infiltrating Al-Qaeda's Yemen operations and volunteering for the suicide mission, he was able to pass on, along with the bomb designed for his attack, information about the group's inner workings. And all that information is now being debriefed by intelligence officials in the United States and Saudi Arabia. Joining us now is Scott Shane, national security correspondent for our partner, The New York Times. Scott, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me.
So what does this tell us about sources and methods in the CIA? And will we describe this as a deliberate leak? Is this some sort of inadvertent detail that fell out? Or are we really seeing Panetta's style of infiltrating Al-Qaeda in Yemen?
Well, I think American authorities were quite unhappy that this became public because it's obviously an extremely sensitive operation. And they, when the Associated Press got a hold of this, they asked for a delay, partly because this agent, this apparent Saudi intelligence agent who had, you know, gone right into the heart of what's considered the most dangerous Al-Qaeda branch today, the one in Yemen, had to get out, had to move his family, apparently, and people had to take other precautions to make sure that when word of this got out, there wasn't a possibility of retaliation from Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, as it's known.
So, Scott, let's explore that. You believe, and the Associated Press was told to sit on this story until that agent was safe in Saudi Arabia, and only then did they get a green light from someone somewhere to actually run with it?
Well, I think, according to the Associated Press, they did not get a green light, but they went ahead anyway. After waiting for, I think, about a week.
I see. All right, so let's talk about this this agent here. We certainly know, going way back to the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan, that working with individuals who even would pose as suicide bombers is fraught with risk in the sense that, okay, you may believe that the agent is working for you, but in the double agent world, there can be all kinds of blowback potential. How much do we trust that aside from this operation, which appears to be successful, that this method is reliable here?
Well, it is, as you say, an extremely risky and kind of terrifying process. Listeners may recall the case of the Jordanian agent who was infiltrated into Al-Qaeda in Pakistan. And got American officials extremely excited about the possibility that he could locate, high-level Al-Qaeda officials. And then he turned out to be working for Al-Qaeda and famously arrived at an American base in Khost in Afghanistan and blew himself up and killed a number of CIA officers and support staff there.
So, you know, is it one for the home team here, and they're going to just accept the kinds of horrible casualties? I believe that was one of the worst attacks against a CIA installation in field history of the agency, right?
It was. I mean, I think that what this shows is that the CIA, with very much relying on and working with partners like the Saudi Intelligence Service, are getting pretty aggressive in kind of turning the tables on Al-Qaeda. You not only have the terrorists having to be the ones who worry about blowing up each day because of the drone program that's operating now in Pakistan and Yemen, but you also now have them, in Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula and other Al-Qaeda groups, they're going to be looking at one another and saying, you know, which of you might actually be an intelligence plant, and that true too is very likely to kind of disrupt their operations, their planning.
As you know, Scott, Al-Qaeda has long had designs on the Saudi royal family, and Saudi Arabia, of course, has its own interests in Yemen. What does this operation say about the U.S.-Saudi relationship? There isn't necessarily a pristine track record as far as Saudi cooperation on intelligence matters is concerned regarding U.S. officials.
Well, as people will remember, 15 of the 19 9/11 hijackers were Saudi, and there was a long history of the Saudis tolerating militancy of the al-Qaeda variety as long as al-Qaeda sort of stayed away from the Saudi royal family. That changed fairly dramatically a few years after 9/11, and in recent years, the CIA and Saudi intelligence have cooperated very closely, especially against this group in Yemen. And the Saudis have a particular reason to focus on that group because a suicide bomber with a bomb designed by the same bomb maker who the authorities believe made this latest underwear bomb attempted to kill Mohammed bin Nayef, a prince, a Saudi prince who runs their counterterrorism program. So they've been directly targeted by this group, and they have every reason to cooperate with the CIA against it.
What do we know about the location, the whereabouts, whether he's alive or dead, of the alleged bomb maker here, the mastermind behind these chemically triggered underwear devices?
Well, as far as we know today, that man whose name is Asiri is still around. And, you know, his boss, so to speak, a guy named Kuso, who was the external operations chief for this Yemen branch of al-Qaeda, replaced in that job Anwar al-Awlaki, who people will remember was the American-born cleric. Kuso was killed in a drone strike on Sunday that almost certainly was directed by information that this infiltrator had brought out. But as far as anyone knows, Asiri, the bomb maker, is still around, and if history is any guide, he will be continuing to try to make innovative bombs that can get through airport security and attack the U.S.
On that subject, Scott, before we go, any chance that there's boxes of Fruit of the Loom underwear of these devices? Are they able to mass manufacture these devices? Any assurances there?
Just given the way they're likely to have to operate in Yemen, I don't think we're talking about mass manufacturing. But al-Qaeda has, in the chaos of Yemen politics over the last year, managed to gain considerable amounts of territory in southern Yemen. And they're perhaps have the space to make more of these devices now.
All right. Good prospect for a future question. Scott Shane, national security correspondent for our partner, The New York Times. Thanks, Scott.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.